Barbara in her book, An Altar in the World, has a chapter called The Practice of Waking Up to God. She speaks of trying to find the something more in life we are looking for within the walls of the church, rather than seeing the whole world as the house of God, where the something more actually takes place. Likewise, Marcus Borg and John Cresson, in their recent 2009 book called The First Paul, the authentic Paul he's referring to, revise many misunderstandings of Paul. Quote, when he spoke of justification by grace through faith, he was not thinking about how to get to heaven, but about transformation of ourselves and of the world in this life here below. Faith journeys represent some reflections on the here and now of our daily lives. We present these everyday words for your reflection. And I have a sort of overarching poem called The Project to introduce. Do I have a choice, really? My project is life, and I will one day finish it. For better or for worse, my marriage to life does not permit a change of partners. It's not if, but how. How I arrange and sew together the pieces in my quilt, the shapes I choose, the colors, the mood. Some days slide by unannounced, anemic, somber, winter gray, nothing to brag about. They pile up days upon days. Hello, neighbor, sure, use my garbage can. Or here's how to multiply the sevens. Now and then, blue sky mornings come along importantly, and I am able to fathom, even play on equal terms with my challenging spouse, who is pointedly more than a project.
When I considered exploring this theme, my intent was to share some experiences of holy presence, the peaks of my personal journey. I had been struggling with a flare of sciatica, and it was hard to focus on developing my ideas. But before I could start, 10 days before Christmas last year, I was wrenched into a bizarre and alien territory, victim of a stroke. Much to my amazement, a glimpse of nirvana followed. Ah, I felt, this is it. This is my story, and I'm eager to share it. Later, to my dismay, the lingering sciatica, which had lain subdued during my quiet recovery, reemerged with my regained activity. The stabbing pain, the deep ache, taking over control over my life again. It is hard to come down from the mountain. It felt like a fall from grace. I found that I must re-examine what the term faith journey means to me. What is my faith journey, if not my journey through life itself? It is not all high drama, not all clear vision and awe-inspiring insights and wisdom. It is honed through the everyday nitty-gritty, and yes, those times of pain and sorrow. I have seen most clearly when all my resources, all my defenses against life's vicissitudes were stripped away. For example, in the early 70s, a crisis erupted which affected our entire family. Completely shattered by the overwhelming challenge facing me, I could only surrender, totally capitulate to the reality. I was so cleansed of my ego and my sense of control that I lived, breathed, and moved in a constant state of prayer. Out of myself, I was able to be a clear channel for good. I did things that of myself alone I could never have done. Obedient to what I was led to do, I was patient in all circumstances. For years afterwards, I marveled at that experience and sought to find that holy place of spirit again. Meanwhile, ordinary life goes on, sometimes blocking our intentions with frustrating detours. There are no roadmaps for this journey. We need one another along the way, but we cannot advise another's route. When the stroke hit, I was again completely stripped of control. It was bewildering and scary. It affected three areas of my brain. I lost my words, an anathema to a writer and poet. I spoke gibberish and could not comprehend the meaning of what others were saying. Totally disorienting. While recovering, I journaled, still getting acquainted with myself. What followed was a holy place of calm and peace. My perspective and priorities were crystal clear. There was a freshness, an expansiveness, a newness to everything. Humbled, mystified, and grateful. I felt more than acceptance. My ego was out of the way, but my sense of selfhood keener, without attachment to outcome or to things. I wanted to stay in that place, but journeys move us onward. Since then, the book, My Stroke of Insight, by neuroanatomist Jill Taylor, clarified many things and continues to inspire me. The key that ties together my experience in the 70s and my recent stroke is the letting go of my own will. Part of my faith journey has been here with you at MPC. Now my lifestyle must change as I have to limit my driving. I will miss you. But as you continue on your faith journeys here, I, miles away, will continue on mine. Faith will sustain us through all things. How blessed we are. Or, as Mary Martin used to say, aren't we the lucky little bozos?
My faith journey began when I was an adolescent. My sister and I were sent to church. Why were we sent instead of taken? During college, church services were places of quiet security. It was not until I had begun to work through some of my uncertainties and doubts in my 40s that I was ready to find a church community in which to participate. I was pleased to be part of a group where there were no political agendas as such. It made me happy to believe that I was helping out the larger community while enjoying work within my church community. I was included in a circle of well-meaning people who seemed to take pleasure in implementing the programs that we put forth. Friendships developed through the personal and social ideas that we discussed. However, my doubts about my worthiness resurfaced, and I needed to withdraw and regroup. I grappled with the distinction between participation within a religious or spiritual body that might mean choosing between an organized church and a meditation group. Which really served my needs? Perhaps the answer is not either or, but and. This question seems to be the next phase of my faith journey.
modern technology. Any day now, someone will have a breakthrough invention or discovery. Maybe it will be a personal jetpack or a flying car. Maybe it will be a cure for some horrible disease. Anyway it is, I have faith that it will be great and solve some of the problems of the world. Why? Look how far the human race has come. Once we had to walk to get around. Once we had to use candles and lanterns to light up the dark. If we have cars and computers and cell phones, I have faith that we can use modern technology to solve the problems of the world.
In praise of awe, I am in awe of the universe, how it hangs together despite our desecrations, how subtle the shadings of millennium rocks, bold the sweep of the sea, sheltering a hidden kingdom of pearl and coral, gifts from a charmed presence no one has seen. I am in awe of the gentle tap of rain on a pane, how it comes and goes as it wills, how we are always behind in explanations of what the earth is doing. Even as we strut about, pretending we've got nature, dark energy, comets, the Big Bang, all figured out by ourselves, thank you. I am in awe of the small print, which no one has eyes to read yet. The earth's declaration of independence from the sometimes clueless human brain.
I didn't want to move, really, but it was necessary. The way I worked with my resistance to it was to reframe it as a divestiture, like what corporations do to have more freedom in their operations. My feeling, after I had managed to detach from our home and garden of 45 years, was gratitude. Gratitude that with the guidance and support of the Divine Spirit, I could see what was needed, do it, and move on. It was a big step in my growth, and I could not have done it alone. It was a big step to accept so much help from my friends and from our devoted realtor. I felt a certain amount of accomplishment about all the stuff that we'd gotten rid of and how quite rapidly we'd adapted and begun to appreciate our cozy little condo. Little did I know that a greater amount of growth was going to be asked of me in this next phase of my life. Living in very close proximity to my neighbors is new and challenging. The first thing I noticed in visiting our new condo-to-be were the yellow plastic lawn chairs and orange table in the hallway. On the wall, facing the street, was a large, multicolored flower crewel work with lots of orange and yellow. Another low piece of furniture was draped in an orange and yellow plaid shawl. All of these, the work of our neighbor Ruth, a seemingly reserved, rather curt 86-year-old church pianist and handicraft artist. Orange and yellow are not my favorite colors. On moving day, the reality began to creep in. We were going to have to live with these pieces every day. Then I remember thinking, if you can't fight them, join them. So I found two bright, equally garish keepsakes and slapped them up on the wall. I thought it would be a temporary fix, but they're still there. The little garden we shared under the stairs was neglected and dried out. I missed my garden terribly, so I wanted to hire our landscape designer and gardener to do it up for us, the way I wanted it, of course, like our other garden. Armed with these thoughts, I began talking with Ruth about the idea whenever our paths crossed. Funny thing, she had her own idea about a woman who worked at Rossmore and did similar spots. There was no openness at all to my idea, I felt. She kept talking about this woman, though she never did any calling herself. Finally, I happened to find a name in the Rossmore News, and it turned out that she was the very lady Ruth wanted. She was great. She made suggestions to us, and together the three of us put the plan for our new garden into effect. I'm doing the watering, Ruth does the sweeping, which is quite appropriate, I think. I bought some big potted plants to fill in our little patio area, which were the same as some that we had at our house, and that comforted me. She's absolutely delighted, and I am too. This was an important experience of letting go of control, seeing how I really wanted it my way, and collaborating for the best possible outcome. We are now very good friends. We keep in touch and watch out for each other. The divine spirit is at work again. Her husband died just 4 years ago, and she loves to talk to Wayne, my husband. Now I realize that reserve may have been shyness or loneliness. She is now a dear and trusted friend. We've even exchanged our house keys.
I have made a commitment to loving more, to bringing love to all the little places I never let it come before. Not only in that place of easy fullness, but also in the small grittiness of everydayness. To enclose the irritations in compassion, to stop the startled word of negativeness, to temper petty anger with thoughtfulness. I am working to make love live a little longer, a little deeper, a little wider. Not just waiting for love to force its way into my heart as it oft-times does, but to open up an easy path for it, where I never thought to ask it in before. We humans do peculiar things, dwelling in hates and petty jealousies, when love is such a better place to live. Yet I ask, is it perhaps that we could not know love unless we had first known unlove?
I define faith journey as a lifelong quest for meaning and purpose. At my age, viewing my life as one of meaning and purpose takes on urgency. I want to continue to develop and use my gifts to make the world a better place. I work on self-improvement, and I try to accept my human frailties. I seek balance between nurturing my inner life and living in community. I strive to act with integrity, consistent with my values. I see life as a wondrous gift of grace from a creative spirit, a higher power beyond my comprehension. I believe we are most fully human when we live with holy imagination, approaching all aspects of life as sacred gifts, ever-changing, ever-surprising. Through holy imagination, we have the opportunity to create and recreate ourselves and our relationships with others. We can use holy imagination to appreciate consciously what we have and to reimagine what we want to change. This past Ash Wednesday, Karen charged us to write a personal statement of philosophy in 6 words.
My response? Well, what are the opportunities here? Through holy imagination, we open our eyes, ears, minds, and hearts to possibility. Holy imagination liberates our personal creativity to bring forth an evolving vision of ourselves and of ourselves in relationship to the world. We can integrate all the bits and pieces and contradictions of living into a coherent and constantly enlarging whole. Through holy imagination, we maintain connectedness to our own bodies and spirits, to others, to all of creation, to God. In the past, I've not given much thought to resurrection and the life hereafter. My rational self agreed with my skeptical English grandmother Nicholson, who said, "I think this is all there is." I'm getting older. This past year, I've attended too many memorial services. Increasingly, I find myself wanting something more. Is this all there is? My grandfather Nicholson, as he lay dying, said, "Ah, the great mystery unfolds at last." A moment later, so goes the family story, my grandfather, ever the artist and appreciator of beauty, took his nurse by the arm, pulled her down close to him, and said as sweetly as any young lover, "Oh, you beautiful woman." I like that story. What lies beyond life as I know it is the great mystery. So be it. And may I too enjoy all the beauty of this life until my last breath. I understand the resurrection to be a rebirth on this side of the great divide, opening my new heart to a life of compassion and joy. Resurrection means treating each day as a precious gift, expressing gratitude to everyone who graces my life, celebrating being alive. We are called to be alive. That is my purpose. So, carpe diem, seize the day. Like the old 60s poster said, this is the first day of the rest of your life.